Good evening. I'm Pat Thurston, your host, and joining me is Russ Baker. Russ Baker is an investigative journalist. He's the founder of WhoWhatWhy.com. He also is an author. Family of Secrets is a book that if you have not read, it is homework. You have to read this book. I promise you, you will learn if you read this book. I promise you, you'll learn something you didn't know, and you will be grateful that you read the book. Russ, thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, always a pleasure, Pat.
So you have a new piece about the case of Jonathan Pollard. And this is fascinating because, you know, this case has been such a controversial case. This is the guy, he was convicted of spying on the United States, selling highly classified information to the government of Israel. And he was sentenced to life in prison. This case gets a lot of people worked up. A lot of Pollard supporters who've called for his release. A lot of people who previously claimed that his crime never harmed, and he never intended to harm the United States. And a lot of those people are claiming that a life sentence is way over the top. So explain to us, first of all, a little bit about who Pollard is and what his crime was and how he was caught.
Okay, so back in, Pollard was a civilian employee of the Naval Intelligence Service. He was essentially an intelligence analyst. Just to kind of cut to the chase, in the mid 1980s, 1985 to be exact, it was discovered that he was basically carting off huge quantities of documents and delivering them to a obscure small unit of the Israelis. When he was caught, he pretty quickly admitted what he was doing. The backstory was that he had approached an Israeli, and told him that he had all of this information. This man was interested. The relationship ensued. He was compensated, and he turned over all this information. Then he was caught. Eventually, he was tried. There was no public trial, and a judge sentenced him in 1987 to a life sentence. I think that there are a number of things that are interesting.
Wait,
about
before you go on, one thing that I was fascinated by too was that when he realized that he was in trouble, he went to the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., right? And he tried to get them to take him in and protect him, and they refused to do it. And that's where he was arrested by the FBI, was in front of the Israeli embassy.
Yeah, it was a very complicated story. He was, to put it mildly, a character. In many respects,
I think he was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe so. He did feel some loyalty to Israel,
right.
But I mean, I think just in terms of the larger story here, the focus that I put on it in this article that you can read on our site, whowhatwhy.com. And I'm sorry, Pat, I've got a problem with my voice.
I currently. Can tell you were out there yelling or something, weren't you?
I wish it was that.
I hope you don't have the flu. It's an awful thing.
No. Anyway, we'll have to work with this. But in any case, what really interests me is the larger issue. As you know, on Who, What, Why, we try to contextualize things and not. I think there's so much of a propensity in the media to report stories in a vacuum.
Right.
This is, you know, here's this story. Here's this interesting guy. Here's this thing happening. We're not that we're not interested in Pollard as a character and so forth, but we're really more interested in the larger story of what are the values in our country, what are the systems, how well does the justice work, and so forth. And so the first thing we looked at was, well, this guy was given a life sentence, which is long by any standards. That's a very, very long sentence for any crime. And particularly for something where there was nobody was murdered, et cetera, et cetera. And typically for espionage or related things, people don't get sentences of that sort. And so that was quite unusual. And it was also very, very unusual because he wasn't a Russian spy like Aldrich Ames or something. He wasn't spying for a sort of so-called known enemy. He was spying for a country that is described, controversially, but described as one of America's closest, most loyal allies.
Mm-hmm.
And so that raises the question, well, could somebody from Britain be given a life sentence for spying for Britain? And that raises all kinds of questions. But I think the larger issue, and we can focus mostly on the specifics of it, but I do, you know, at least I want to telegraph that I hope our conversation will go toward these larger questions of what is doing something against the interests of the United States. And that gets into all of these people like Aaron Swartz, who ended up having to commit committing suicide. I think you and I, we may have talked about that. The case, another one on our website, a guy named Barrett Brown, who posted some links.
Right, I was just reading about that.
Yeah, you know, so there are a lot of questions.
And Caracow.
Yeah, that's right. There's a former CIA guy, former NSA guy, who all face potentially long jail sentences for feeling that the public had a right to know things. So I'm not going to equate that with Pollard, but the issue is that all of these people think that in some way that this information wants to either be free or be shared with others.
Right. And I think that when it comes to Americans who have access to information that they think Americans need to know, I think that's a little different, though, when there's a person who is an American, but he was spying on the United States, delivering information from the United States to Israel. However, what's fascinating is these new documents have revealed that those people who claim that he was not out to harm the United States, they were correct, right? He was not even gathering information really about the U.S.
Right. Well, that's where this is. That's where I was going with this. In the case of Pollard, and that's where these subtleties come in. There was an agreement, an information sharing agreement between the United States and Israel, and we have only recently found because a nonprofit outfit called the National Security Archive, not to be confused with the other NSA, the National Security Administration Agency, rather. The National Security Archive, which is housed at George Washington University, tries to obtain and get released documents that are made to be classified, put away for a long time. And they've been trying for years, and they finally got a judge to agree to get these documents released. And one of them was a CIA damage assessment from 1987. That's the year that Pollard was given this life sentence. And the damage assessment actually says that Pollard did not turn over to Israel any information about the United States itself, about its defenses, about its operations, nothing. That all of this was information about Israel's enemies, the same countries that the United States was supposedly supposed to be sharing this information with Israel. And so specifically, the information that Pollard's handlers in Israel were looking for were information on Syria, particularly on drones and communications, about Egypt and its missile programs, about Soviet air defenses and how it related to, again, to the Soviet Union's relationship with allies in the Arab world that Israel perceived as a security threat. And so the issue becomes that Pollard essentially felt that the United States was abrogating its agreement with Israel, which it did have. The CIA, in this damage assessment, actually admits, and it actually says in there, under a heading, what the Israelis did not ask for, it actually says, quote, they never expressed interest in U.S. military activities, plans, capabilities, or equipment. And so,
okay, stop, stop. I have to take a break. You rest your voice for a minute. We're going to come back and we'll continue along that vein. We're talking about the case of Jonathan Pollard, convicted of espionage in the United States.
I know that you have, because there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
On March 23rd, spend an evening in the spectacular Walnut Creek Library for the annual Authors Under the Stars fundraiser, featuring 20 of the Bay Area's favorite writers, including Kara Black, Brian Copeland, Sylvie Simmons, and David Talbot. Man, that looks good. Tickets can be purchased at wclibrary.org/gala. That's a KGO community reminder. I'm Pat Thurston, and my guest is Russ Baker. He's an investigative journalist. He's the founder of the website. It's an investigative journalism website called whowhatwhy.com. And we're talking about the case of Jonathan Pollard. Now, Russ, you were talking about how fascinating this case is because Pollard was convicted for espionage, and he was given a very, very harsh sentence. And yet, none of the information that he passed really had anything to do with national security or the national defenses of the United States. He was passing on information that the United States had, intelligence the United States had, on other countries, which we had an obligation or an agreement that we were going to pass on to Israel anyway, but for one reason or another, we weren't. Tell us how Caspar Weinberger was involved in this case. And, you know, what he may have done to help Pollard get such a tough sentence.
Sure. Well, I want to emphasize that our mention of Caspar Weinberger, I believe, is unique. In other words, with all of the coverage, there was enormous amounts of coverage of Pollard. In fact, there's a book out about him with a subtitle, I can't remember exactly, but it says something like America's Most Notorious Spy. I mean, honestly, it's hard to believe that in a couple of hundred years, the most notorious spy we ever had, I mean, that it wasn't, you know, a spy for the British during the revolution, right. Or, I mean, there have been so many.
Or
so,
Russia, you know, during the Cold War.
Or yeah. There were German spies in World War II.
I sure.
mean, you know, how this person is identified as particularly notorious. And so this is sort of a story of the, again, and you and I, Pat, talk about this all the time, the failures of the media to really help the public understand what's going on with these things. So I kept looking at this thing, and I was scratching my head. I was saying, well, you know, I mean, you know, even if he had turned over something about the United States to the Israelis, what would they have used it for that would have damaged the United States? It was never clear what that was, and now we know that he wasn't even doing that. And so then I'm sitting here saying, now why would they give him such a long sentence? And so I called around, I emailed, I reached out to a bunch of people I know who are former CIA analysts, NSA and so forth, people I know who follow these kind of things. I said, what's the story here? What's the deeper story about why he got such a long sentence? And so you'll see in our article on Who, What, Why, I quote a fellow former national security person, and he says, well, he says, actually, the sentence was just given to him by this judge based on a kind of a memorandum that was filed with him. Well, that memorandum was written by, as you mentioned, Caspar Weinberger, the Secretary of Defense under the Reagan-Bush administration, and that is where, to my investigative reporter's mind, this whole thing gets interesting.
Okay, well, how does it get interesting? Why was Weinberger getting involved in this? And surely he knew about the damage assessment.
Well, I started just thinking about Cap Weinberger and what was going on in that period, and suddenly it dawned on me. Iran-Contra. Mm. The Iran-Contra scandal, which is horribly complicated, and
right.
even those of us who followed it at the time found it kind of mind-boggling because there were so many different pieces. But a part of the Iran-Contra scandal, just to kind of focus on Israel, was that Israel had been sort of reaching out to factions in Iran that they thought were more moderate, that they thought could be dealt with. And, you know, that story is very relevant today with the whole question of how dangerous is Iran and, you know, is it good and necessary to bomb Iran? Are they developing nuclear weapons? And, you know, a guy like Ahmadinejad is actually from a more, believe it or not, despite his statements, a more sort of a moderate kind of modern faction. And so back in the 1980s, Israel was trying to engage with that faction, and they talked to the United States about engaging with them and perhaps even starting to build a relationship by supplying them with some arms that they could use in the war against Iraq, the Iran-Iraq war. And so you have a relationship going where the United States is in bed with Israel on a secret program to supply arms to Israel, which then later on becomes the full-blown Iran-Contra thing where, through this circular thing, the proceeds are going then to supply weapons in an undeclared war in Nicaragua, all illegal because Congress hadn't authorized it. The American people knew nothing
right.
about it. So the Reagan administration and Cap Weinberger were facing a tremendous scandal that was just starting to come out, and it involved, in part, the United States working with Israel. And at that very moment, you see the United States go against Israel and against Pollard, making an example, I think, of him. And it just strikes me, and my question is, was that whole Pollard thing for no purpose other than to divert attention from this secret Iran-Contra relationship with Israel?
Right, to try to make it appear that we weren't their lapdog.
Well, whether it was that we were trying to appear and not their laptop, that we just didn't want, I guess the idea was just not to focus on how closely the two were working in this operation that they wanted to remain very, very secret.
So Pollard then could just be tossed to the wolves. This is just somebody who was going to be sacrificed. He's been in prison now. He's been in prison for 26 years.
I think that kind of thing happens all the time. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at this case of this Barrett Brown, this guy who posted a few, again, you can read about that on our website, whowhatwhy.com, on the front page. This is a young fellow who came upon online. I mean, there are documents where there are really some scary things going on involving the United States government, involving surveillance of Americans and the use of some of this by American corporations. And all he did was posted links to some other stuff. And, you know, he potentially faces 100 years in jail. And so I guess what I'm saying is there's a lot of throwing people to the wolves for things that you really have to say, you know, what exact harm did they do to
right.
our real interests as people and as citizens of this country?
It's kind of weird how that happens with us, how somebody says, oh, they're a bad guy, and everybody says, okay. They don't question, well, why? What did he do? How bad was it? How far did it go? So now, okay, these documents have been released. So we know what the CIA's damage assessment was of what Pollard did. He's been in prison for 26 years. He went into prison, by my calculation, when he was about, 33 years old?
Yeah.
So he's 58 now, 59, something like that. I mean, right. He's been in prison a long damn time. And considering what these documents say, and just considering, you know, the issue of justice, is President Obama even taking a look, do you know, of doing something to grant a pardon, to a reprieve, to let him out of prison, to do something?
Well, so he's under a lot of pressure. I mean, certainly there are people who have supported him actively, have been significant donors, who have been, as I understand, trying to talk to him about this. And he's supposed to be visiting Israel, a fairly important trip. There's some talk about it being delayed because of domestic politics in Israel, but perhaps later this month. And there's no question but that the Israelis are going to bring this up with him. You know, it's a tricky thing with Obama because it's very hard to know why he does what he does. I mean, on some issues, certainly he would sort of fall in the liberal camp, but on most of these sort of described as national security issues,
yeah.
He is very, very hard line.
Yeah, and secretive. I mean, as secretive or more so than the Bush administration, which is really disappointing. You know, I was reading another piece today about Pollard. I was reading it in the Daily Beast, and it wasn't specifically about Pollard, but it was headlined, "The Israeli Obsession with Jonathan Pollard." And it was kind of fascinating because what they say here is the reason that Israelis are so focused on Pollard is because of these core Jewish values that are deeply felt by both religious and non-religious Israeli Jews, that all Jews are responsible for one another. They have a communal pledge to ransom Jewish captives at almost all costs. And military code of conduct, they have a guarantee that no wounded Israeli soldier will be left on the field of battle. And so Pollard is kind of exemplified in these core values. And so the Israelis are not, the people in Israel are not giving up on his case even after 26 years.
That's right. And of course, I mean, historically, even with non-Jews in the for example, the Innocence Project and Barry Scheck and all of these. Right. A lot of Jewish lawyers have been very, very involved in trying to get people out of jail who may have been wrongfully convicted and so on. So there's a long tradition of social justice in the American Jewish community, which, of course, runs directly counter in many respects to the way that the Israelis have handled the Palestinians. And this has caused tremendous rifts in the American Jewish community, a lot of anger and hostility. And I think the Pollard case, in a way, Pat, sort of dredges up all of these unresolved issues. You're touching on a few of them. In fact, the one of the reasons I love coming on your show is we get into things that just are never discussed. And you made another very, very important point, which is that the American people are told by our media, and I'm talking about even by some of the supposed more erudite media, very, very quick to kind of try to prove their, you know, patriotic bona fides by jumping on these things, and there really is a lack of subtlety.
Russ, I've got to take a news break. Will your voice hold out for another segment? Would you mind staying?
Yeah, I could do that.
All right, terrific. Thank you. Because I do want to get a little bit into Barrett Brown, too, since you've brought that up. I'd like to go into a little bit of that. Russ Baker, my guest. And right now we're going to check in with Carolyn Burns. She's in the KGO Radio newsroom, and she brings us this update. Hi, Carolyn.
Hey, good evening.
This is the founder of the website whowhatwhy.com, which is, I mean, this really is a pretty amazing website. I'm looking at some of these stories here. Right on the front page, of course, there's the Jonathan Pollard spy case. Plot thickens. Outside the box video series, the men who killed Kennedy. Fracking, not the gas industry's version. The saga of Barrett Brown, which we're going to talk about in just a minute here. These shoes are made for whacking. The power of nightmares. There's a lot, and I'm just looking at a few of them here. But anyway, I did want to get to this case of the guy from Anonymous, Barrett Brown. Russ, you're writing about this. You've mentioned a couple of times this case of Barrett Brown. Tell us about him. Tell us what's going on with his case. What it was he actually did that he's facing 100 years for?
Yeah, and by the way, I should state that I'm the editor of Who, What, Why. This particular article was written by one of our staff writers, Christian Stork, who is much more knowledgeable than I am, but I'll do my best to sum up what I understand about the case.
Okay.
So I'm happy to do that.
So he's Barrett Brown is a person who has been involved with Anonymous, the hacker collective.
Right. Well, as I understand the story, and again here we do go into detail on it, but basically he was essentially more of a writer. He really was not a high-level computer programmer, hacker type. He got involved with Anonymous. Anonymous is a loose collective of people who basically communicate over the Internet, generally don't know each other, don't know who the others are, but at some point he gradually became a kind of began to be described as a sort of a spokesman, although there really isn't any such thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did essentially was some other people, not him, had hacked some documents at a firm called Stratfor that has been in the news quite a bit recently. WikiLeaks involved as well with that, where they obtained internal memos of this firm, Stratfor, which is a private intelligence consulting firm, puts out a newsletter and so on Who, What, Why. We've done several articles. We did some about some interesting documents regarding General Petraeus. Shed some new light on him, came out of the Stratfor cache. But Barrett Brown was also involved with another cache of documents, and these come out of another private company called H.B. Gary. This is a federal military and intelligence contractor, and some hackers had gotten into their database and pulled all these amazing documents and then released them. And what this Barrett Brown did was he posted links to those documents. He did not himself obtain the documents, and he did not post them. He just put up the links. But what happened was the federal government began going after him, and as we explain in Christian's article, it looks like to us like they were looking for an excuse to put this guy away and to send a message that you were not to do this. And they got him on a variety of very, very questionable things, posting a video on the on YouTube that the FBI took as some sort of an attack. Also, even just posting the those links, they said that was trafficking in stolen property.
Trafficking? Don't you get paid when you traffic in stolen property?
I don't know.
That's very, very odd. Okay, and so they went, they did a raid on his home. He went to his mother's house. They raided his mother's house. They threatened her, right? Because she was,
right,
like harboring him or something while they were raiding,
right,
his house. And
right,
so he got mad and he posted a video where he threatened the agent who was in charge of the investigation. Is that right?
Yeah, he basically said, I know who you are, and, you know, if you think you can treat my mother this way. I mean, it was, yeah, obviously not wise. It was intemperate.
Right.
But you know, they then treated him as if he was sort of the Unabomber or something, and that this was some sort of a grave threat. And so that's one of three different counts that they're prosecuting him on.
Yeah. Well, and what he said, if I get this right, this is posted in the article. He says, I know what's legal. I know what's been done to me. And if it's legal when it's done to me, it's going to be legal when it's done to FBI agent Robert Smith, who is a criminal. That's why Robert Smith's life is over. And when I say his life is over, I'm not saying I'm going to kill him, but I am going to ruin his life and look into his effing kids. How do you like them apples? Is that the extent of the threat?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
So he's going to get data.
You better be careful, Pat. You better be careful. You could be facing a life sentence.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, how many of these messages are going to have to be sent? You know, it seems to me that the more messages that are sent, I mean, we have poor Aaron Swartz who killed himself over their prosecutorial overreach, how ridiculous they were being. All these messages are being sent to people who are actually whistleblowers, who are trying to tell the American people important information that we really need to know. And what they say is, if it's published somewhere, it's aiding some enemy somewhere, because, yeah, the American public now knows it, but anybody can know it. Well, unless it's something that's going to actually aid the enemy, we need to know this stuff. We have an obligation as responsible citizens to know this stuff. So if they keep making these examples of people, I don't think it's going to make people stop doing it. I think more people are going to start doing it. I hope they do.
You know, and if you step back from all of this stuff, and of course I was about to say that obviously if somebody is you know, building a bomb and lots of innocent people are going to be killed, it's horrendous, and you know, you need to have strong deterrence and so forth. But you know, even in that situation, we've seen so many examples where you know, you had inciters, you know, you had undercover FBI people,
agents
like
provocateur, right.
Yeah. And so you know, when you strip all that away, you say, how many real threats are there? There,
right,
obviously there are some,
sure,
but there are really not that many. And again, Pollard kind of fits into this thing, because what exactly did he do then? What harm did that cause that would send him to jail for 100 years? In the case of Barrett Brown, here's what I think is the crux of the matter. And as you know, I like to go right to the crux of the matter. With Barrett Brown, the thing is that he had a project called Project PM, and he was trying to do crowdsourcing, which is you reach out to the public and you get everybody to get involved. And so he said, look, somebody, some hacker, collected 75,000 emails from this company, H.B. Gary, this defense contractor, and it looks like it's full of interesting stuff. I don't have the capability to read or assess it. We'd love everybody to get involved, you see. And this is where he became a threat. And so what they did was they started looking into them and then identifying certain revelations. So here are some of the revelations. This H.B. Gary, which was hired through a middleman outfit on behalf of some of America's largest corporations, what was going on, among other things, was there was a conspiracy by lobbying and cyber security firms to do sabotage and disinformation against critics of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Bank of America. So you're laughing, but what that means, Pat, is that They basically sabotage and disinformation is very similar to what these hackers are accused of.
You know what, Russ, I've got to take another break. Do you want to stay, or are you?
Yeah.
Is your voice giving out? Okay,
yeah,
stay,
no,
and
no,
let's finish this up. And my laugh was because this is important information, and how dare they? That's what I was laughing about. So hang on, we'll continue this because there's more that was revealed, and we want to talk about that as well. Russ Baker, my guest, go to his website, whowhatwhy.com. It's a great journalistic source for stories that you don't get anyplace else. WhoWhatWhy.com. I'm Pat Thurston. You're listening to KG.
I get off of this mountain. You know where I want to go. Straight down the Mississippi River to the Gulf of Mexico.
Good evening. I'm Pat Thurston. Russ Baker is my guest. Russ is an investigative journalist, and we're talking about a story that appears on his website, whowhatwhy.com. It's a story about Barrett Brown, who's associated with the Anonymous group. His arrest and charges that have been brought against him, where he's facing 100 years in prison. 100 years in prison. And what are his crimes? He published a link to documents about a private security firm. It's a private intelligence firm, right, Russ?
Right.
Private intelligence. That's different from a private security firm. Those are the people, I guess, who protect your house. But an intelligence contractor, H.B. Gary Federal, and its parent company, H.B. Gary. And there was some really fascinating stuff that was revealed in here. And you would think that this is information that the American people should have access to. And you said the first one was this conspiracy by lobbying and cybersecurity firms to engage in a disinformation and sabotage campaign against critics of the Chamber of Commerce and Bank of America. I mean, did it ever come to fruition?
Well, I don't think we know for sure.
Okay.
But you see, what happened was these entities like the Chamber of Commerce, Bank of America, they always have these arm's length deals. And so they hire typically law firms. And this one company that is mentioned in this article by Christian Stork on our website is this law firm Hunton and Williams. And so it's a law firm, but then it also has lobbyists, and it also has, you know, a PR arm and so forth. And so because of attorney-client privilege, any communications are not going to be subject to release in court. And so Bank of America or the Chamber of Commerce can go to an outfit like Hunton and Williams and say, we want you to make these critics to go away. They're causing us problems. They then can go and separately contract with a company like H.B. Gary to do something. And what we're looking at here are documents where they were talking, they were proposing things that they wanted to do. My guess is some of them didn't happen, but probably some of them did, or at least they were in process. But you see, this program this release by Barrett Brown may have really, really prevented these outfits from going full blown. And you could imagine the anger that they must have had. And you see, what we're getting into here is the very, very close relationship between our tax-supported government and these giant corporate entities, and the way that these corporate entities, I think, in this case, were able to lean on the Justice Department to say, we want you to make an example of this kid.
Right. Yeah, exactly. They wield so much power, and they're part of the whole, you know, permanent structure instead of the one that changes with every election cycle. Okay, also revealed in there, an operational mass surveillance and data mining program targeting the Arab world.
Yeah, I don't know too much more about that. It certainly sounds interesting. Of course, what we know increasingly about the NSA is that they seem to, I'm trying to remember what the word is. It's like, you know, some multiples of a gigabyte. You're there near Silicon Valley. I'm sure somebody will call in with the right word. But they have so much data, supposedly trying to be able to mine, you know, all of our emails, all of our phone conversations, everything being sucked into a giant computer. And so I don't know exactly how this differs. occurs, although it did specifically focus on the Arab world. So obviously there's a language issue.
And there. there's also here an unnamed project to utilize online persona management with the intent of manipulating information or perception, conducting data mining, and infiltrating social organizations. So
right,
they're getting into Facebook.
Well, not just that, but that also involves just creating, Facebook. It involves basically creating, pretending to be who you are not, going online, making friends, getting information, and so on. And, you know, that again is very, very similar to these things like COINTELPRO and other government programs that were discredited.
Yeah, well, exactly. And they should be discredited, and you're not supposed to be doing that to the American people. I mean, we're not supposed to be spying on us. We're the citizens here. We're the ones who are supposed to be in charge. What a quaint notion.
I don't know if you saw that piece we did some time ago about a man named Cass Sunstein, who was Obama's supposedly in charge of openness in government. And paradoxically, he had written a paper. He was, I believe, at Harvard, had written a paper saying that the government had a right and a need to go into chat rooms and so forth and pretend to be who they were not in order to tamp down discussion of conspiracies and other thing, and that this was also somehow harmful. I think all of these are outgrowths of the same kind of mindset.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. Oh, ew. It makes me very uncomfortable because I think I have 2,000 friends on Facebook, and I don't know most of them, but... But, you know, they engage in interesting discussions. Okay.
If you see Colonel Sanders on there, that's actually me.
So, I'll remember that. Okay, so tell me what the status is right now of Barrett Brown. Is he in prison waiting for trial? What's going on with him right now? Is he going to go the way of Bradley Manning? Are they going to take him to some military facility and let him rot for a couple of years before he even faces any sort of indictment? What?
Yeah, as I understand it, and again, as just to point out, I did not write this article, so I'm not an expert on this, and our staff writer worked on it, spent a lot of time on it. As I understand it, I think he is in jail. I think he's being held, and I don't know that there is any trial date, but I thought that the trial was supposed to be sometime this year. I'm just looking now to see if we've got a date on that.
Yeah. Well, I don't see it in here. I'm looking at the article, too, and I don't see it in here right now. Well, he's just another one of those people who is trying to get information to the American public. And he's a little odd, this guy, and he should not have made the stupid video that he made. But, you know, there's another part of that, Russ. I don't know. People expect us to be superhuman, that when we're being harassed by the government, or when there's somebody who's being wrongly accused, or there are people who have historically been harassed by the people in authority, any time they say anything back, suddenly, you know, they're evil, you know, evil personified, and it gives another charge that can be brought against them. And see, this is proof that you're really a bad guy after all. But human nature being what it is, sometimes people do lash out. It wasn't smart of him to make that video, but, you know, he didn't like his mom being picked on.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I think we want to ask ourselves whether as a society we want to be under those kinds of onerous constraints where we have to be so worried. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know if they do anymore. Years ago at the airport, they used to have signs at the security checkpoints that said, "No jokes, please." You know.
Right.
You know, I had a friend who actually many, 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 many years ago, long before 9/11, and you know, he waved at a friend and he said, "Hi, Jack," and they grabbed him.
No. That's not true, is it?
That's a true story.
Okay.
A guy named George, I won't say his last name, but my point is this, is that more and more and more, this is a kind of a creeping thing. It's happening so incrementally and so slowly, and most people are not following these things, and they don't realize that at some point you could suddenly realize that you're at that, you know, boiling frogs point, you're at the moment of no return, when it really is too late to deal with these things. And I think we have to take an interest, and we have to say, you know, are these bad people? Are the people in the government, you know, inherently good? What is national security? Why did the CIA for all those years insist on, you know, redacting whatever it was, like 95% of all the words in that damage assessment,
right,
you know, on Pollard. And then we find out that it actually would have, I don't know if you'd say cleared him, but it would have given cause for him to get a rather small sentence.
You would think so.
You know,
but the judge knew it. The judge saw the damage assessment, didn't he?
Well,
or did he just go by the statement from Casper Weinberger?
I don't think the judge did see the damage assessment.
Okay.
No, I don't think he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would assume that the attorneys would have a basis on that. But the problem with all this national security stuff, you have trouble introducing anything. I mean, it's surreal, really, because in many of these cases, whenever you know, anybody tries to introduce anything in the defense, the prosecution says that to even acknowledge the subject would endanger national security.
I know, it's the craziest damn thing. You would think they'd be able to come up with some sort of system where they would be able to have a fair trial. And I don't believe all those national security insistences. I mean, I think WikiLeaks has shown us that they classify everything. They classify everything because they don't want the government to be embarrassed. It's not being classified for national security purposes to a large part. I think the vast majority of the things that are classified have no business being classified. And that in and of itself ought to be a crime in the United States of America. Hey, Russ, you go rest your voice. It has been delightful to talk with you. Let's tell people again where they can read the things that you write.
Okay, whowhatwhy.com is our website. We're an independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan news site. We're on Twitter at whowhatwhy. We're also on Facebook, whowhatwhy.
All right, terrific. And it's a worth your while following. Thank you so much, Russ. Delightful to talk with you again.
Thank you, Pat.
You bet. And, you know, I just want to say we're going to have to go to the news here in just a minute. And we have a guest who's joining us coming up, a local author, as a matter of fact. I'm kind of anxious to talk with him. But I do want to say this. It's you and me. I mean, I this was kind of what we were talking about in the first hour. It's you and me. How did we get to this point? How did we get to this point? I know, you know, there's all that the mass thought. We've got to get away from that. We've got to get into more critical thinking. We've got to start asking questions and stop taking everything that we hear, especially when it comes from the government, as the God's honest truth. It isn't. Ask questions. Ask for evidence.